Tonight, to begin in just a few minutes here for Colorado House District 47. That will be followed by a debate for Colorado House District 62. And finally, for Colorado House District 46, that is all coming your way tonight, right here live on KSBK FM. And we take you now to Pueblo Community College and the Hogue Theater, and your moderator for tonight, Steve Henson.
To see you here today. Thank you for coming. Thank you to our candidates, and thank you to Steve Henson, who's running this show for us. And thank you to the chamber, especially. We wanted to let you know that the League of Women Voters is running an issues forum on October 9th at the Impossible Players Theater. And we would love to have you join us. As you probably know, this ballot is huge this year. And if you would like some interested conversation around the issues, we would love to see you there. It's from 6 to 8. The Impossible Players Theater is on 10th and Main, am I correct? And there are some flyers out on the tables out there if you would like one to remind yourselves. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you, and thank you, Steve, for coming out of retirement to help host these debates, so thank you.
My pleasure. Good evening, everybody. My name is Steve Henson. I was the longtime editor of the Pueblo Chieftain, and I'm happy to be here moderating this evening. I wanted to go over some of the rules real quick. I don't think we're going to have a real rowdy audience tonight, which is great, but you never know. Just for your information, the candidates don't have access to their cell phones on the stage, so nobody's going to be sneaking them answers and so forth. And for the candidates, when the timekeeper says your time's up, please finish your sentence, finish your thought, but don't keep rambling on, please. For the audience, turn off your cell phones. I know there's you may be inclined to get your cell phones on and a little bit later watch the vice president's debate. If you can't do double duty, sorry. Well, you know, we need to get outside and do that. Please don't make a comment when the candidate's speaking. You know, don't groan or moan or groan or speak out and dispute them. This is really for the candidates. It's not about us, really. So we just need to see what they have to say. So please don't do that. No signs are allowed inside the inside here. It's a state building, and so if you've brought candidate signs or everything, anything like that, don't wave them around. And for any of you that may be inclined toward conspiracies, the candidates have not seen tonight's questions. One person has seen the questions, and that person's speaking to you now. Nobody else has seen them. And you'll see that the candidates are not wearing Secret Service type earpieces so people can help them with their answers. So let's just put that kind of nonsense away right away. Okay, we flipped the coin, and Elizabeth Bultais won. She elected to go second. So we will have opening remarks from Ty Winter.
Thank you, Steve. And I'd like to thank the chamber, and I'd like to thank Dwayne for all the hard work he does. He works tirelessly to put community events on, and I really appreciate him. Thank you all for being here this evening. My name is Ty Winter, and I'm the current representative in House District 47. I'm also the minority leader. And it's been truly an honor to serve House District 47. It's the nine counties in the southeast corner, and it's a very important district to the state of Colorado. If you ask me why I got involved in this, like most young men, I was home one weekend having coffee at the local shop, and I was sitting around with some old railroaders, and we were chatting. And like most young people, I was complaining about everything, and one of the old-timers looked at me and said, "Are you going to keep complaining or actually do something about it?" So at that point, I really jumped in head first. You know, I got on numerous boards and committees, from school board to water board, fair board, Farm Bureau board, Chamber of Commerce. I really wanted to be involved in my community. I wanted to have my finger on the pulse of what was going on. I wanted to make a difference in my community, not only for my children, but the children that are growing up in House District 47. I'd have to say that all the miles that I've put on, probably over the last 3 years, I've put on close to, I would say, 60,000 miles. It's a massive district. And I've talked to people from one end to the other of this district. And I believe I have my finger on the pulse. I definitely have the energy, and I have the fire in my belly to represent such a large district. Like I said before, the honor of my life is having my children and being married to my wife, having a good family. My family roots, fourth generation farm and ranch kid from Los Animas County, and then own a third generation family business, generational in our community, have the respect of our community, and we work hard for them. And I wanted to carry that service into the rest of my life. So like I said, other than having my wife and kids in my life, this has truly been the honor of my life. I look forward to continue working for House District 47 to keep pushing the issues that we face, to keep representing the good, salt-of-the-earth, hardworking people in our district, from the coal miners to the steel workers to the ranchers to the farmers to the small business owners to the mom-and-pop store trying to make a living. That's what I was elected to do, and that's what I've done. And that's what I continue to do once reelected and in the 75th General Assembly. So thank you for being here this evening. I look forward to a spirited debate.
And we'll now have opening remarks from Elizabeth Boltice.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Boltice. I'm running for Colorado House District 47 also. A little bit about myself. I grew up in Colorado, Golden, and I went to college at Fort Lewis College. Colorado is definitely my home. I'm married for 26 years. I have a beautiful 25-year-old daughter who has just expressed how proud she is of me. So, and that in and of itself is worth doing this. But there is so much about District 47 that just really enthralls me. You know, my mom always said that Walsenburg was a gem, and we finally got to move down to this area and live in La Vida. We found our forever home. And I love this district. I love everything about it, from the foothills to the plains. It is just a gorgeous, diverse, unique part of Colorado. And I was raised to admire and respect farmers and ag and ranchers and understand that they are the hard workers that are getting the good work done. So I don't think that they should have to fight so hard for what they're trying to do. And I think that there are compromises out there for all of us. I know there's a huge urban-rural divide, and that's something that I've never quite understood because I truly believe that we all do need each other. So I know that if we could find a way to work together on that, because our little municipalities, our little urban centers have a lot of specific issues that need to be handled and dealt with, a lot of systemic issues. And the farmers and the ranchers and the ag have some separate issues out there too, which all kind of tie in together when it comes down to it. So I really do believe that we need each other, we can find a way to fight for each other. I want to be the voice for HD 47 up at our General Assembly, and I think it would be really awesome to have a rural voice in the majority in the House. I think we could really get a lot accomplished that way. So I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to driving those 60,000 miles and seeing people and meeting people and doing what I can for them up at our Capitol. I have no special interests other than the people in the district itself, so I'm very happy to honor myself up to you guys to vote for me.
Okay, we'll now begin the question and answers, and we'll alternate so each candidate gets a chance to answer each question first. Ty, you'll answer the first one. In general, what do you see as the key issues in the area covered by District 47?
Right now, sir, it's affordability. It's inflation. It's affecting everybody. It's affecting people at the grocery store. It's affecting people at the gas pump. And it carries on to other parts of life. I mean, we talk about ranchers and farmers in the district. It's harder and harder to make a living. And as that cost spirals and carries up, who does it go? It goes to the consumer. So I would say probably the most important issue that we are facing is mothers having a hard time putting groceries on the table. I was recently at the Pueblo County Fair, and I was talking to families during the fair, and they said they had a huge dropout rate in Pueblo County of participants. And one of the number one reasons was you either feed your animals or feed your family. And that's something that our families are facing. And the inflationary rate's higher in Colorado. It's something that we're facing. The cost of energy is more expensive based upon some of the policies that have been passed. So I think affordability and a family being able to put food on the table, gas in the car to get to work, to be able to take care of their family and have a little bit of expendable cash. That way they can push their family forward. So definitely affordability, sir.
Okay. Elizabeth?
I'm sure Ty knows too. There's so many little issues, but water, of course, is huge. We need to protect and preserve our water. But when it comes to our people, we've got such issues with poverty, substance abuse, disenfranchisement. And I honestly think that I'm a very big proponent of sustainable growth and getting our economies moving again. I think, and I'm very serious about sustainable, because when I say this is a magical area and it's special, it is. But we can't have stagnant economies either. So we've got to have some kind of a compromise or some kind of a move forward so that we can make sure that we've got something there for everybody, because everybody belongs. Every single person in this district, in this state, in this country belongs here, and there's a place for them. And we just have to find it and create it and make it. And, you know, education is a huge part of that, getting our public schools back together, getting more activities for our kids, keeping them out of the way of drugs as much as possible. I really feel like getting our communities rolling again would make a huge difference for this district.
Okay. Ty, any other thoughts or rebuttal?
Yes, sir. We had it in House District 47. We did have it. But we saw a supermajority regulate our businesses and our industries out of business. Look at oil and gas. The voters with Prop 112 handily told the state with over 56% of the vote, please do not do setbacks on oil and gas. And then the governor and a supermajority went in the next year and did that, and that hurt my county. That hurt Los Animas County. So when my opponent says that we need somebody of her party at the state capitol, that's just more of the supermajority that has hurt House District 47, that has killed oil and gas, that has killed coal. I said it during special session. Elections have consequences. Legislation has consequences. We saw this year, we saw them protesting up at the Capitol over the clean energy bill, what it was going to do to the steel mill here. It has to stop. The supermajority is attacking House District 47. They've put us in the rears. They take away our industry. They take the ability of a hardworking people to make a living, and then they try to hook my constituents on money like a drug, and it's not right. Let the people of House District 47 be proud. Let them produce for themselves. Let us build our own tax base, and let us be a proud people that produces and thrives in southeastern Colorado.
Elizabeth, rebuttal?
I absolutely agree that overregulation is a huge issue. I think that would be by somebody that does understand the importance and the differences between what goes on in HD 47 and what happens up in Denver, to be in that majority to have a voice. Because the regulations are an issue. There has got to be a way to make it so that it doesn't kill people, but we have to have regulations. We have to keep safety. We have to keep our water safe. When we are drilling for oil and doing all those things, we have to make sure that the communities around us are safe. That's where the regulations come in. So I think there have to be some sort of regulation. There has to be some kind of oversight. But I think there can be a way to do that without destroying the industry itself. That's just the way I feel about it.
Okay. Okay, Elizabeth, you'll answer this question first. It's the first of two questions about crime and violence. The state legislature every year wrestles with the issue of gun violence, which of course includes school shootings. If you could pass legislation regarding guns, or what would it be, or should we? And then how do we overcome the numerous mental health issues?
With guns, I am very much for sensible gun reform. I don't want to touch the Second Amendment. I don't want to take away anyone's right to buy a gun or have a gun. What I want to talk about are fingerprint triggers, where it has to be your fingerprint to fire that gun, key fobs, storage, things like that. We have to have a key fob to start our car, keep our car safe, keep it from being stolen. If a gun is at home and you're 5 miles away from it, your child is not going to be able to pick it up and shoot it if you have the fob. I think small, protective measures, without taking away a person's right to have a gun, although I want the automatic assault weapon ban back, and I want it back now, but everyone should have their guns. It's in the Constitution. It's in the Second Amendment. But I think we need to make it safer for our kids any way possible.
Okay. Ty?
I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, sir. It's an unalienable God-given right enshrined to us in the Constitution. And it's just as important as the rest of the constitutional rights that we have. It's what's kept a free nation. You have to understand that It's to protect life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. It's to defend this country from enemies, foreign and domestic. General Yamamoto in World War II, when asked why the Japanese didn't even consider invading the homeland, his comment was, because there would be a gun behind every blade of grass along the shorelines. That's an important deterrent. Not only that, I mean, it's to protect this country. The founding fathers just didn't get done going on a deer hunting expedition when they created this country. They just got done creating a country, a free nation. And they put those words in that document to make sure that we ever needed to make this country free ever again, that the American citizenry had threat. Some people say that that's radical and extreme, but that's what the documents say, and that's what the founders meant. And to try to read it or explain it any other way than the plain print is wrong. So I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. We need the Second Amendment, like I said, to protect and produce tranquility in this country and in this state. So thank you. Okay.
Okay. As we talk in the rebuttals, if you both could address the issue, everyone knows that mental health is a component in school shootings, for example, and other other types of shootings. What, if anything, can the legislature do about that?
I think... Well, with mental health and with guns, I mean, the bottom line is if you pick up a gun and you shoot another person, there's got to be something wrong mentally, in my opinion. I mean, unless it's you're protecting yourself or your family. But if you just decide to pick up a gun and shoot a classroom full of students, it's obviously a mental health issue. We need more resources. We need more awareness in our schools. We need more red flag laws. We need the red flag law is fantastic. But keeping the guns out of the hands of people with mental issues is absolutely key. So we've got to talk about background checks. We've got to talk about, you know, the conventions, whether you can buy guns, you know, without having any kind of check whatsoever. But the mental health issue is key. And I think it's ignored in this country, too. It's stigmatized. It's something that is considered to be bad or a fault, and it's not. You know, people just need help. They just need, you know, to know that there is a resource out there for them so that the gun is not the first or final answer. That's what I got for that.
Hi. Thank you, Steve. I'm honored to say I did dig in on this, and I have done some work. In Senate Bill 23-174, we've asked a bipartisan piece of legislation that allows children in House District 47 that are on Medicaid to bypass their primary physician, and their parents can take them straight to a mental health professional. In House District 47, we have one of the highest enrollments of youth in Medicaid, and passing this bill was an honor. So, sir, I cannot talk about what I'm going to do. I've actually dug my hands in on this problem. Mental health is an issue, and especially in rural Colorado. Thank you. We saw during COVID that suicide rate in rural Colorado was higher than our urban cousins. And it's a sad thing, and it is stigmatized in rural Colorado. It's hard to get ranchers and farmers who are a proud people, like I talk about the miners, the coal workers, to go to these clinics because they don't want their car being seen outside of these clinics. That's why we also worked hard on telehealth over the last couple of years, not only for the youth, but for the adults as well. We have a mental health crisis in this country, and that is exactly the problem. And until we can tackle this, we have an issue, and we need to start having hard conversations. There are so many people that are on the streets right now that need help, and based on some of the laws and regulations that we have, we can't help those people. So we have to have the hard conversations. We need to keep working on mental health, but I'm proud to say I have been working on youth mental health since being elected and continue to do so. Thank you.
Okay, Ty, you'll answer this question first. Law enforcement agencies, from small police departments to the Colorado State Patrol, are struggling to attract and retain officers. What ideas do you have that the legislature can do to improve that situation?
Well, first and foremost, we need to quit passing legislation that makes people not want to get in the profession. I mean, we got rid of qualified immunity in this state, and that drove people away from the profession. They can't even do their jobs. They're afraid of being bullied on TV, people coming to their houses. They hold up the thin blue line flag and they're called horrible names. That isn't how we treat our law enforcement, the people that take care of our families and protect us at night. So as a legislature, we need to stop decriminalizing crime. That is what happened in this state. We are climbing in all of the topics that we don't want to be. Right now, I think we're third in violent crime. We're number one in bank robberies due to the FBI statistics, number one in porch pirates, number two in auto theft per capita in this state. I mean, what's going on? It's been climbing steadily since 2012. My solution is, sir, is that one side has had the keys of the car too long, and let's be honest, the supermajority is drunk. They need to turn the keys over and give somebody else a chance because the people of Colorado deserve better. Thank you.
Okay. Elizabeth?
Well, there's a lot involved in police enforcement, and a lot of it has to do with the mental health issues, too. We need to have different types of officers for different types of situations. We need to have community connection between our officers and our people, and more of an understanding that not all petty criminals are lifelong criminals. There are small crimes where people are getting involved early on, and we don't have to throw them all in jail. We can take care of them in a different way, try to get them out of the criminal system before they're thrown into it. There's a lot of reasons that we are where we are with criminality, and it's the poverty, it's the stagnant economy. And bringing police officers in, we need to pay them, that's for sure. And we also need to train them for the different situations and make that training accessible to them, because we do have a lot of mental health issues that the police are called upon that they're not equipped to handle, and it always, or not always, but it escalates. And there have been some yucky situations in this country with the police force and the anger and the volatility. And I, for one, think that we've got to stop pitting each other against each other. Yes, there are criminals. Yes, that's why we need police. But that doesn't mean we have to hate them. So sorry. Thank you.
Ty, rebuttal?
I'd like to agree the economy is stagnant and it's horrible. I would agree with that 100%. One thing I'd like to say is I did help with that. There was a bill passed on earned time credit for people that are in prison, and as they earn certificates, they actually earn time off of their sentence, and I stood up next to a representative that ran that bill, 110%, and backed that bill. I believe there's rehabilitation, and we need to make people good, productive members of society. There's nothing wrong with that. But when you talk about policing, they can't police, because I talk to police officers. Every person they make contact with is 45 minutes to an hour worth of paperwork, whether it's a hello, a hi, a stop on the street. They can't do their jobs. That's the problem. The legislation that we pass makes it harder and harder to do their jobs. And I can tell you this, my final statement on crime is I believe if you commit a crime, you should be punished in the state of Colorado. We need to back the blue, and we need to back truth in sentencing, because people are getting out of prison too soon, they're recommitting crimes, and the recidivism rate is too high in the state of Colorado. This year I actually sponsored a bill to put more restrictions on child traffickers. It actually makes their sentences higher. So I've been doing the work. I'm going to continue to do the work. Thank you very much.
Elizabeth, a rebuttal?
I do understand there is a lot of recidivism, but I think that we can tackle that in a different way, in a more socially conscious way, that we can find better ways to rehab, find a way to better ways to reincorporate people into society so that recidivism ends. I just can't believe that, in my opinion, throwing people in jail is not the answer if we're not going to try to get them back into society. So that's it.
Okay. Elizabeth, you'll answer this question first. We all know how polarized our nation is, and that includes our elected officials. If elected, how will you resist your party's leadership when it insists on party line positions and votes and work with your colleagues across the aisle?
That, I honestly feel, is a pretty easy question for House District 47. We are our own little entity down here. When we go up to Denver and the way they look at our issues, it's completely different. We need to have representation up there that represents what we need in our area, which is rural and urban. So we've got to, cut across the aisle. I do know there's a supermajority right now, but that, there are extremes on both sides, and neither of them are good, in my opinion. That's what's hindering the rest of us from trying to get some logical work done. So that kind of thing, you know, when you're talking about extremes, yes, they are there, both sides for sure. But we can work together. You know, there's no reason that we can't talk about these issues and not scream and yell about them. Because they're all issues. We all want the best, right? We all want the best for our kids. We may have different ideas on how to get there, but those ideas can come together and we can compromise. There is such a thing as compromise, and we can work together and find ways to make that work together. And I think that we can do that. I think we're getting past all of this crazy, I hope.
Okay, Ty.
Thank you, Steve. I have done that. I passed numerous bipartisan bills. I worked on the child trafficking bill with Majority Leader Duran last year. We have a great working relationship. Being the assistant minority leader, I'm in negotiations with the majority all the time on floor work, on what legislation we're going to work for the day, on trying to get good legislation passed. There is an issue, though, because the problem is being in a supermajority, there's really no work to have in the sausage made. They can pre-cook a bill, run it through, and it goes through. We've seen problems with that just recently with the check valve issue, where there was an emergency called because a piece of legislation was really going to hurt plumbers and it was going to put us, the citizens, in the rears when it comes to getting check valve inspections done. The problem is the legislation is rushed and it's too fast. Like I said, I've done the work. I've got a list here of bipartisan bills I've passed that have helped House District 47. And I look forward to continuing that. Right now, I'm working on 5 pieces of bipartisan legislation with counterparts across the aisle. It can be done. You know, being from Los Animas County, I'm going to be honest with you, we have a lot of Kennedy Democrats in Los Animas County. And what I tell people in all 9 counties in the district, and you can ask anybody, is anymore in rural Colorado, it shouldn't be Republican versus Democrat. It should be rural versus urban way of thinking. We have to protect our heritage, our values, and our way of life. And the supermajority in Denver just doesn't understand that. I've been telling that story. My job is to continue telling that story. And that is what I will do when reelected. Thank you.
Elizabeth?
I absolutely agree that working across the aisle is the best way to do it. And I do know that a supermajority is somewhat intimidating. They can just supposedly run something through. But from what I've seen, you know, and especially in my opinion, I'm not going to go up there and just go along because I'm a Democrat. I've never been that way. I've worked for these small business organization, NFIB. I understand the issues of the small businessman. I respect and admire our ranchers. I'm not going to go up there and sign legislation that is going to cause them damage. You know, there are ways to do this without, you know, and yes, it is a supermajority, and yes, they got there for a reason. But we, you know, we have to work together. And I would love to be the voice up there to make sure that HD 47 is heard and what the ranchers and everybody are worried about and what's affecting them and what's affecting our small little communities. And, you know, I think that, you know, we can bring it back to the middle and we can make it work for everybody.
Ty, any other thoughts?
No, sir, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. The next question, Ty, you'll answer it first.
Yes, sir.
All of us who drive in Colorado know that the traffic congestion on the 2 major highways, I-25 and I-70, is just getting worse and worse. Is there anything that the state can do from a practical standpoint to get people moving more easily on the roads?
You know, sir, one thing I've learned being at the state capitol is being upset with CDOT and the handling of our highways is a bipartisan issue. A lot of time you'll see legislators in the Capitol standing around complaining about this issue, trying to hold CDOT accountable. It's a shame. There's people in this room that live in Trinidad, Colorado, and you know when you come over from Raton, New Mexico, how beautiful the highways are, and you drop into Colorado, and for being the beautiful state we are, it's actually kind of embarrassing what our roads are like. Like I said, I've put tons of miles on in this districting. We have resurfacing going on right now from Kim, Colorado to Pritchett. There's resurfacing going on right now from Pueblo to Walsenburg area. It needs to be done. But this is an issue that we're facing. It's a resources issue. That's one thing. It's a staffing issue. That's another. But there's a lot of things that can be done. There's a lot of checks and balances. But it's a struggle at the Capitol, sir. Right now we're looking, the reports are coming out, is we're going to be $900 million in the hole before we even start this legislative session. And that's going to put a big bind on budgets for everything. So I think that we can do a lot better job with our roads. And I think one big thing is we need to get the bureaucrats out of Denver. We need to get them out, especially on the rural roads, so they can see exactly what we deal with. Get them out in the district and show them the potholes that we have to drive through down coming up and down the road.
Okay. Elizabeth?
I'm all for high-speed rail up and down the Front Range and taking the pressure off of I-25. I'm a railroad family. My dad worked out at TTCI. He was worked at AAR in D.C. And I know that it's just an environmental plus, getting a high-speed rail up and down the Front Range. Eventually, maybe east and west. It's a little bit tougher up in those mountains. But I think that that would really alleviate a lot of the pressure from the airport, you know, even helping commuting. And the roads themselves, the infrastructure, we got to pull some of that money in and get that infrastructure working. And that's what it's there for. So we just got to find the people to do it.
Okay. Ty, other thoughts?
First and foremost, when it comes to the money, it's not a revenue issue, it's a priority issue, and we see that with a lot of the programs that we put forward is I think we prioritize in a wrong way. High-speed rail is great, but I've looked into and been part of that project. I actually worked with Representative Basenecker last year on talking about that legislation. Let's be real. Pueblo might see it in some time in the future, but before Huerfano and Los Animas County sees it, it's going to be some time. We've actually talked with the commissioners about trying to get our counties out of the taxing district for now, so my constituents that are having a hard time paying property taxes as it is, dealing with affordability, don't have to pay that added tax for a service they're not going to get. Have no problem with the rail, but to be realistic, we're not going to see it for quite some time. We have to realize, though, that our farmers, our ranchers, and our producers need our highways to get cattle, seed, and feed to market. So it's important that we keep fighting to make sure that the highways and the, you know, county back road paved highways are taken care of for our producers. Thank you.
Elizabeth, any other thoughts?
Oh, sure. Yes, I absolutely agree with that. But I do also think we need to start working towards the future in a lot of different ways. And I think that we've started working on that high-speed rail is great. I've noticed all the work on I-25, which is wonderful. But I do know that we need to keep our roads maintained. It's just always been. There are a lot of rural places up in the mountains, too, that need their roads maintained. So it's very, very important. If there's any legislation I can sign to get that going, I absolutely will, to keep our highways safe.
Okay, Elizabeth, you'll answer this question first. Every candidate says they're going to fight to save Colorado's or Southern Colorado's water and protect it.
Mm.
Well, that all sounds really nice. But what exactly will you do to fight off the interests of Northern Colorado who want our water?
Hi, that's a tough one for me. That's a conversation that I really need to start having because it is a very, very complicated issue as I've started to study and learn it. I do know that we need to protect. There's a lot of overdevelopment going on around north of us, and we need to make sure that they stay within their reins, been not coming down and taking our water. You know, keeping our water down here, you know, there are certain ways we can do that. I like the idea, and this is just something that I've been throwing around, but bringing some more revenue down to us, some museums or trade schools or that sort of thing, and having the cities and the governments lease water from farmers instead of buying them out. And I don't know if that's something that can maintain and help with something, but I don't have that many ideas on it yet. But I am fascinated by it, and I am very, very adamant on making sure we save that water for us.
Okay. Ty?
First and foremost, we're only one of two headwater states in the United States, and it's us and it's Hawaii. Right now, the lower states in the compact have to start holding up their end of the deal. Golf courses, country clubs are going in, Arizona, California, Nevada. And where does that water come? It comes off the back of Coloradans. We look at the lawsuit we lost with Colorado. We look at what Nebraska's trying to do right now. They're calling their shares off the Republican River, so we're getting attacked basically from all fronts. We all know that sustainable growth only happens on the backs of agriculture and agri-center communities. And I've said this before, the most important thing to me is we have to realize that this is a national security issue because food security is a national security issue. That's another thing that we have to do is to protect our water in this area. We have the Arkansas Valley Conduit that's coming to bring fresh, clean water down into the Arkansas Valley. But the final thing I want to say is our farmers and ranchers unfortunately have to sell their water because rules and regs that are put on them. And when they can't supplement their incomes with oil and gas royalty checks, it hurts them even more. Unfortunately, our number one number one export out of rural Colorado is our children, and it's a shame. We need to find a way to protect the water, try to keep it on the land, keep an environment conducive for these families to keep the generational farm and rancher going, and feed Americans and Coloradans. Thank you.
Elizabeth, other thoughts?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. I know that water is involved in the oil and the gas and all of that, but there's a lot of pollution and everything that goes along with it. So that's another really big part of protecting our water, is making sure that all the industry that's going on around it is not damaging it so we can keep it for us also.
Okay. Ty, other thoughts?
You can fact check this. Colorado and oil and gas is the cleanest producing state in the nation. It's a fact. Right now, we're constantly sweeping the severance tax money to balance the budget. Where do you think DOLA grants come and BEST grants come from? That's severance tax. On the Agricultural Smart Committee, they always say DNR's budget is funded 92% by severance tax, and I always raise my hand and say, where does severance tax come from? They say oil and gas production. So where we're at right now is we do it cleaner than anywhere else in the world. Let's unleash the beast. Let's let the roughnecks go back to work. Let's put tax base back in our rural counties. Let's put my blue-collar workers back to work. And let's make Colorado energy dependent again so people don't have to worry about that being one more burden on their back as they see the highest inflation this state's ever seen. Thank you.
Okay, Ty, you'll answer this question first.
Yes, sir.
When marijuana was legalized in Colorado, there was excitement over how much that would benefit the Colorado economy, and it did at first. But now, the industry has seen declines, and that promise of great things has faded significantly. But at the same time, the problems caused by marijuana haven't gone anywhere and have gotten worse. What's your opinion on this?
First and foremost, the people spoke, sir. We left it to the will of the people, and the people spoke. I live on a border town. I live in Trinidad, Colorado. We saw, I think, over 40 pot shops spring up. Did we see a rise in homelessness? Yes. Did we see a rise of the little containers on the ground? Yes. Did we see more people in our shelters and in, you know, trying to get free meals? That's a fact. It did happen. But we've also seen the revenue decline as well. Pot shops sprung up in Clayton, New Mexico, and the people driving from Oklahoma, Texas, and New Mexico, they had no reason to stop in Trinidad, Colorado anymore. So at the end of the day, sir, the people spoke. They said that we could legalize it. I don't think the schools were properly funded like we said they were going to be or the voters expected. I might think that that might have had a little bit different to do with this. But right now we have to deal with the aftermath of that. And it only exasperates the mental health issues we have. It only exasperates the dirty cities that we have and bringing in people that just can't take care of themselves. So I think we're going to have to look at picking up the pieces and moving forward. And unfortunately, the dip we've seen in our economy is from that. And that's something that as a state legislature, we're going to have to deal with in the future. And that's really unfortunate. You know, don't count your eggs. You know, they say don't count your chickens till your eggs hatched. I think the eggs have done hatched, and there's not as many as we thought we had. And we're definitely going to have to do some work to rebuild that part of our economy. And I'm not saying actually the industry itself, but try to backfill for that, because that's a huge hole in our budget, and it's a huge hit to the state economy and what we look to do with the future of making a good, clean, great state. Thank you.
Okay. Elizabeth?
Yes, I do understand that it did bring in a huge revenue push when it first came in, and a lot of it went to the schools, but not as much as we'd hoped. I understand that. When we do talk about marijuana as a problem, I don't think that we can leave alcohol out of that conversation also. I think both are legal, one more dangerous than the other. And I honestly believe that if we're going to be talking about the issues that marijuana causes, we have to bring in the issues that alcohol causes. It's the same sort of thing if you really want to think about it. And I don't know how much revenue alcohol brings in, probably a whole ton. But are the damages outweighing it? That's my question to you. It's not just marijuana.
Ty, other thoughts?
I'm good, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Elizabeth, anything else?
No, thank you.
Okay. We're down to our closing remarks. Elizabeth won the coin toss, so she elected to go second. So we'll have closing remarks from Ty.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you all for being here this evening. Like I said in my opening, it's truly been an honor to represent you all. I put over 60,000 miles on this district. I've talked to mothers. I've talked to fathers. I've talked to numerous people across House District 47. Like I said before, they're good, salt-of-the-earth, hardworking people. They're middle-class people. They're people that just want to take care of their families. They want to go to church. They want to go to school functions. They want to be able to make a living. They want to put food on the table. They want to be able to put gas in the car. They want their husbands to be able to go to work. They don't want their families broke up. They're tired of leaving the state. We need to unleash our economy. We need to put people back to work in House District 47. We need to make our farmers and ranchers thrive. I think that that's really important. I think the most important thing, like I said before, is we really have to figure out a way to bridge the gap of the rural-urban divide. It's a real thing at the state capitol. You can ask anybody that spends any time up there. It's a total different way of thinking. It's not like we live in two different parts of the state. It's almost like we live in two different states anymore. And I constantly look at my counterparts across the aisle and I plead with them. You do you, let us do us. The legislation that you pass at the state capitol, it affects my people. It affects the young people. It affects the aging population. And it affects my local governments. They want to be able to provide services, and we can't do that without a good, clean tax base. And the legislation that we've seen, unfortunately, has pulled a lot of that from us. So I can tell you this much. You can look at the work I've done. Go to my website, tyhd47.com. You can look at the bills I've passed. You can look at my track record. Go to my social media pages. See how I speak for you, the people of House District 47. See how I represent you. See the work I've done for you. So I ask you this. If you get behind Ty Winter, he's going to get behind the mom. He's going to get behind the dad. He's going to get behind the steel worker. He's going to get behind the coal miner. He's going to get behind the farmer and rancher. He's going to get behind his communities. Because, like I said, it's an honor to serve you. This is the most important job I've ever had, and I can't say that enough. So in closing, I would like to say, God bless Pueblo, Colorado, because we're here today. God bless House District 47. And most importantly, God bless the United States of America. And thank you for doing this debate with me. Thank you for moderating. And thank you to the chamber once again for such a great event. And thank you to Pueblo. I love you all. Have a good evening.
Okay. Elizabeth?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chamber. Thank you, Women League of Voters. Thank you to everyone that's here that came out and is engaging in the process. I mean, this is so cool. I love it. And I love having arguments, not arguments, discussions. And I truly believe that that is the way our government can and will run. If we can discuss with each other on the issues, if we can remember that we are all the same, no matter what the color of our skin, our sexual orientation, whoever we decide to pray to, that's who I'm going to represent, is every single person in that district. I have no special interest whatsoever outside of the people of the district and the well-being of our environment in that district. And I grew up in small town America. I know what it means to love and rely on your neighbors, and to care about your neighbors, and to be a part of a rural community, and to be able to go and knock on someone's door and say, I need your help, and they will be there just like that. That's what Colorado is about to me. And HD 47 is even much more so. So I'm so honored to be here and to have my party put me up here to represent them, and I would love to represent HD 47. I promise to do it with honesty, I promise to listen, and I will legislate with integrity and inclusion. So I do hope you vote for me.
Well, thank you all for being so respectful tonight. We really appreciate you coming out, you know, and it was especially with the Vice President's debate tonight. It really is nice to have you here. That concludes our forum for District 47, but we have two more if you'd like to stick around. So thank you and good night.
And you're listening to Candidate Debates tonight from Pueblo Community College's Hoag Theater. We will return to PCC right after this.
Thanks so much for making us the most listened to station. We're Southern Colorado's KSPK Country.
Hey girl, you make me wanna write a song. I'll sit you down, I'll sing it to you all night long. I've had a melody in my head since you walked in here and knocked me dead. Yeah, girl, you make me want